Welcome to This Is Our Call. This is the third time that we've tried to do this intro. I'm Jonathan.
And I'm Matthew.
I'm glad that one worked.
I know, but you didn't say the whole a podcast where we're talking about life, theology, and the gospel.
See, now you just said it. We're good.
Just saying.
Because just saying. Four takes later, we still couldn't get it right.
I don't know. You kept messing it up this time. I don't know why.
How many takes did we do the last time?
Just one.
Yeah, right.
Like maybe four. Maybe two.
It was like four because you kept laughing in the middle of saying the words, and I don't know why you were laughing. It's like you couldn't say your name.
It's just your jolly personality. Who knows?
Here we go with the jolly again. You know what I don't want to do today?
What do you don't want to do?
I don't want to go home and mow my grass.
You have such a small yard.
Yeah, but it's just I don't want to mow my grass. I know it's small. It's about the size of your old yard. Maybe a smidge smaller.
Oh, it's totally smaller than my
old last yard. Could not have taken you that long to mow. It was all flat.
You need to come mow my grass sometime.
Your new yard is a lot larger than mine. I know that.
Anyway.
But you also have to realize I haven't mowed, until this summer, I didn't mow grass for like 10 years, 12 years. Longer than that.
Welcome to home ownership or
home rentership. Rental.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Not quite owning.
Hey, guys. So we're going to pick up really from where we left off last time. So this is going to be testimony part two. And look, thinking through this, one of the other reasons we wanted to do this as well was just to take an opportunity. Another thing of testimony is really a proclamation, if you will, of the grace, mercy, and glory of God. And we wanted to take an opportunity to really praise the Lord for what he has done and give thanks there and share that and worship God as a result of all those things. And so Jonathan went last time, so I guess it's my turn.
I think it's your turn. Your turn, big boy.
Yeah, it's it's my turn.
A big boy.
Yeah. So Jonathan, why don't you ask me a question and we can get started.
So Matt, where did all this start for you? Let's start, way back in the day.
Well, I don't remember what year my parents met.
I don't need to know about that portion.
Okay.
That's icky.
Yeah. Okay. So you just want to know specifically the portion where
let's talk about your pre-Jesus, your coming to know Jesus, and your post-Jesus.
Is that what the testimony portion is supposed to be about?
Pretty much.
Okay. Yeah, so
in a layman's term, simplified manner, pre, during, post.
Yeah, and I think that kind of layout's effective too, right? And so this is a great plug for me to talk about Ephesians just for a hot second before we fire dive in.
You just
so,
can't get away from Ephesians, can you?
And look, it's the perfect place for the gospel there in 10 verses. It follows that kind of pattern we've been talking about. And so Ephesians 2, verse 1, and you were dead in the trespasses and sins in which you once walked, following the course of this world, following the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work in the sons of disobedience, among whom we all once lived in the passions of our flesh, carrying out the desires of the body and the mind, and were by nature children of wrath like the rest of mankind. And that's where it starts. And that's really where all of us start, is the point Paul is getting at there. And look, that's where my story starts too. Grew up in a loving family, a family that loved Jesus, loved God, went to church, did the Wednesday thing,
the
Sunday thing.
Thank the Lord loved you.
Yeah, they did. And they loved me through quite a bit. So, yeah, grandparents that loved the Lord, family that grew up loving the Lord. And really, I can't remember a time that, I cannot remember a time where our family did not go to church, talk about Jesus. I mean, it was just normal. It was normal life. And when I started kindergarten, so we're talking young, right? I was diagnosed at a pretty early age with OCD, or obsessive compulsive disorder. And so for me, what that is was it's exactly what it sounds. It's you obsess about something and then you can't stop until you meet this compulsion. And that's why it's a disorder. And so it's a mental disorder. And so for me in particular, it centered around hand washing really to start with. And I think what triggered it was we were in kindergarten. I remember a nurse, I don't know if it was a nurse or not, or another teacher came in and they did this presentation on germs. And so they took like a black light and they cut the lights off and they did this like little display and showed you after you washed your hand how many germs were still on there and stuff. And I don't know why, but I think that's what triggered it for me, because I don't remember having really a problem before then. But I would wash my hands religiously, right? So much so that they would crack open and bleed. They just got so dry all the time. And so they just looked like I was, my hands looked like I was 80 years old. And it was kind of painful after a point.
They've gotten better.
They have gotten better. You know,
I've
learned
like
to,
you're maybe 65.
Yeah. I've learned to control it a lot more since then. I was diagnosed with OCD at a very young age. And, you know, at first glance, you know, it's kind of like, okay, well, what does that have to, how does that impact? And it had a huge negative impact on me, because it didn't just stop for hand washing. It spread into other areas of my life, right? So I couldn't shake your hand. I could not sit in certain places of my home. And so I would actually, like at dinner, if I thought the chair was dirty, for example, or unclean, I would have to go get a clean towel and put the towel down before I could sit down in the chair. And so most people, when they come home, typically speaking, it's kind of like a sanctuary. I'm gonna sit back, lean back in the chair and just go, you know, relaxing, like, you know, what a day kind of thing. And that just wasn't the case for me. I guess I had certain safe places, quote unquote, like where I felt, you know, clean and that. But in general, like, it's hard to do when you're living with other people, and I didn't have full control of my environment, right? And so I've got two younger sisters as well, and I was never really a big brother to them because of some of what I was going through here. And I was at school, I could not interact socially with my peers. So I went to public school, and I could not interact socially because I had to wash my hands, had to stay clean kind of thing. And I think my teachers realized it was a big enough problem when this is the memory I have clearly. I'm sure there were other things, but I was sitting in class one day and we had those desks that you had the lift up thing and you could put stuff underneath.
Oh,
it.
Oh yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. And the inside was always like disgusting.
Yeah. And anyway, so I had like a pencil or a marker of some kind on my desk and it rolled off and hit the floor. And my teacher wanted to make me use that same pencil again, and I couldn't do it. Like, I think I remember walking out of the class. I just could not do it. And then after that moment, you can imagine all these other kids are like, what the heck is this guy's problem?
This kid's weird.
Yeah, you know, it's weird.
Weirdo.
Yep. And so they put me in special education classes, or, you know, special ed, whatever it's called these days.
Depends on which county you're in. Julie just switched jobs, and it went from EC, aka Exceptional Children, to CCR.
Exceptional Children sounds special than special education, I think. Exceptional Children is way better than special education,
so,
in my opinion.
Here's my small side note beef is, like, I understand trying to make it more, I don't even know what the purpose of it is, but, like, when I think Exceptional Children, I'm thinking, like, the academically gifted, which they call AIG or something like that. I don't know. But anyways.
I would have appreciated it. You know,
a better thing than special ed.
Special ed, yeah. And so for me, special ed was, and maybe this has changed, but I don't really think so. In general, the way special ed was viewed by other students was, those are a couple of things. Either the weird kids, the retarded kids, the dumb kids, whatever you want to call it, like, they were, something was wrong with them, and that's why they're here. They're not normal at some level.
Yeah, I think it was that essence of, like, you just don't talk about it. I think if there's a little more talking, like, hey, you know, Matt has to go here, and he just gets extra help with being clean. I don't know how they would explain your situation specifically.
I mean, it wasn't people just with my situation.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
all
yeah.
Different
it's,
types
yeah,
of things,
all different things. Anywhere from autism to just learning disabilities in general.
Right.
Yeah. The social problems, I guess.
So I was put in those classes. I don't remember if I was in, I think there was a period where I was predominantly in special education classes during that period. And I mean, at school it was horrible. I was just, I was the outcast. I was the kid that sat alone at the lunch table by himself. I was that kid. And Jonathan's sitting over here smirking for a second because he's such a jerk.
I'm holding it back.
And the reason he's smirking, and just to, as a side note, to interrupt this story is, this is a very quick rabbit trail. So several years ago, we did a fall retreat for our old youth pastor, Chris Moore. I think we asked him, hey, can we come speak? And he was like, yeah.
We said, do you need anyone?
Yeah, do you need anyone? And so I was actually sharing my testimony from the stage, and I was sharing this part of the story, actually.
Note, Matt and I had been friends, accountability partners for like well over 10, almost 15 years or something like that at this point. Like,
yeah, this
had
been
known each other for a long time. I knew pretty much everything about Matt.
Yeah.
And
so I'm sitting up on stage and I'm like, you know, I sat at the lunch table by myself. At a certain point, you just want people to sit next to you, right? You don't want to be the outcast. And I grew up in not a poor family. I mean, I think we're okay, but we were not. We were lower middle class, I think. And I think that would probably be fair to say. You know, my mom stayed at home. My dad worked. He worked at Sears. You know, it wasn't like we were wrong. Anyway, so typically
you weren't going to school in no Bentley.
No, and you know, typically we didn't buy lunch. If I recall correctly, we bagged it. And my mom, the one thing that we splurged on for whatever reason was Trix yogurt,
which is good.
Which is good. Trix yogurt is great.
Delicious.
Full of sugar. So I would get a little Trix yogurt to take with me. And I almost never ate my Trix yogurt because I would try to pawn it off on another student if they would come and sit with me at the lunch table. I wanted friends, and I wanted to be accepted. I just wanted to be like everybody else. And so I'm sharing this story. And then,
which wasn't as serious as Matt just made it, by the way.
This jerk over across the table from me starts laughing. I think I was sharing this part of my testimony at this fall retreat, and you started like laughing, and I'm like,
did.
Why are you laughing about this?
Because I didn't know. Like it was the one thing like Matt had like somehow never talked to me about. And I know that it was this jerk
moment. It was like
this
small detail.
It was like this small detail, but I was like, I never knew that you would trade your Trix yogurt for friends.
Side note, for all those of you who are in this situation, it worked for a while, I think. You know, it didn't produce real friends, but yogurt equals friends.
Yogurt equals warm bodies next to you.
Yes, that's correction. Yes, that's true. Anyway, so
you literally just said they weren't friends.
They weren't. They weren't. They wanted my yogurt.
Keep going.
Anyway. So yeah, I mean, I was in special education classes, and you know, I grew up hearing about this gracious, loving God, and if any place should have been different, it should have been the church. It should have been the people in the church, but it wasn't. It was the same. And so, if God was real, and if God was loving, man, that just didn't make sense to me. God, if you are so good and you are so loving, why would you do this to me?
Would you say your experience at church was worse than at school?
Oh, definitely. It was way worse because at least the people at school were honest. I mean, the people at church said they loved Jesus and loved people but hated me. You know, like it.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't ever remember like shunning you to outcast.
No, I don't think so. Just I was
I
never,
knew you were weird.
I was never included,
I mean that in a loving way,
as
by the way.
Part of the group.
Yeah.
You know, I was always on the outs, and it didn't matter what I did. I could never get, you know, in the inside. And I worked really, really hard to try to hide what I was struggling with because it was harder to try to hide that at school because I was in special ed and I was there longer. But at church for an hour, hour and a half, I can maybe try to suppress that a little bit. I can hide that to try to have, you know, friends. And I just realized, man, if God is real, then I don't want anything to do with any of this. He's a cruel God. And his people are no better. His people are no better. So I developed a deep-seated anger for all things God. And my anger drifted in towards a hatred. I mean, a real hatred. And my hatred into a bitterness. And my bitterness into a, I think I'd call it maybe loneliness. I don't know if that's the way to describe it. It was more of like just a black hole of nothing. Like I just, all that emotion just emptied out and I didn't care anymore. I just didn't care. And that led really to a depression, and that depression really into suicide. Like a suicide was a way out for me. And look, I my home was a prison. I was not a big brother to my sisters. I was a burden on my family. I remember my mom came to get me up for school one morning. She put her hand on my back, and I couldn't go to school that day. I'll never forget my mom, I think, crying about that and just saying, Matt, we need to get you some help. We need to get you some help. And so I started therapy. I think I started behavioral therapy first. Was clinically diagnosed OCD. Tried some medication, didn't really help. And I felt like it changed who I was when I was taking it. And so I just really started contemplating suicide. And it's funny, you know, I didn't really believe in God, but as much as I didn't believe in God, I ended up talking to God quite a bit.
It's funny how that always works.
You know, like shaking my fist at God, if you will, right? I did not want God. Even if God was real, I wanted nothing to do with this being. Nothing to do with him. I wanted to rail against him. You know, I was the guy going to war with God.
That you didn't believe in.
That I didn't believe in, right? I wanted to go to war with all things God, though, right? Because so many people believed in this, claimed this, and I was just, I wanted nothing to do with it. And I just had so much pain. So suicide was my way out. I started trying to kill myself. And I think I was around going into middle school. I think it was right around that age point. I don't remember exactly how old I was. And I think all this came to a head for me after I tried a couple times. And one night I decided, okay, this is the night. This is the night. And so I went into the kitchen one night and I grabbed a long steak knife and I was going to gut myself, basically slit my throat, slit my wrist, whatnot. And I wanted out. And I guess I reasoned that I don't have much of a life now. Nobody wants me. I'm a burden on my family. Whatever is next must be better, if there even is a next. And so I looked up to the heavens in my kitchen, right? It wasn't like there was a starry night. And I looked
to the God you didn't believe in.
To the God I didn't believe in. And I just said, God, you're not God.
I dare you.
I dare you. I dare you to stop me if you are real. It was in that moment, like Ephesians 2 pops into my head again, like verse 4. But God being rich in mercy, like rich in mercy, I wanted nothing to do with God. I didn't want God to come and find me. I just mocked God. And God found me that night. And man, I hit my knees. Knife fell out of my hand. I started weeping, shaking, trembling. I was crying. I could not contemplate what was going on. I was just overwhelmed with the presence of God. And for the first time, what I felt like forever, I experienced what Paul talks about, this peace that transcends all understanding. And I knew that God was real. And I knew at my core that he was good. I didn't understand how all that worked. I just knew that he was real and he was good. But God, when I didn't want him, being rich in mercy because of the great love with which he loved me, even when I was dead in my trespasses, he made me alive together with him. And I met God that night. That's how I met God. Or I should say God met me. When I didn't want God. God said, you're mine now. And out of a mockingness of God, God said, I'll have the last laugh. You know? And so that's how I met God. And I didn't have I'd love to say I had a 180 experience. Look, depression didn't go away. My hatred didn't go away. Suicide didn't go away. My OCD didn't go away. God was just real to me. That was it. I mean, that was the illuminating moment, the defining moment. And for years after that, I wrestled to try to control my OCD to some extent, to work through some of my feelings. And really, by the time high school rolled around, I still was in a position where God and I mean, we had a relationship, but I was, you know, we were rubbing shoulders in not a good way, if you know what I mean. Like I still had questions. You know, I still had some anger, some hatred in my heart there.
Were most of your questions at that time just around of why God, how could you do this to me kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of them were why. I just didn't feel like I was going to have any type of semblance of a normal life, and I was still the outcast, you know. High school was an opportunity to kind of try to be normal, you know?
Like a reset almost.
Yeah, almost like a reset to a point. And, you know, I would avoid other people I went to school with when we went to high school because I wanted to try to start over again. I don't think I really succeeded in one way. I think I kind of maintained that people just thought I was weird, thought I was strange.
You did magic tricks.
I did. They were cool, okay? I'm actually pretty good at it, so don't say it like it's like, oh, you know, you did this little cup and ball trick. No, I was like, that was pretty legit, actually.
But you did do a cup and ball trick.
I don't think I did one.
Well, you had that little red ball that you would like make disappear in people's ears and stuff.
Sure. Sure. I did that thing.
Your
too.
Favorite was coins. You had a lot of fun with coins.
Coins, did some levitation stuff. Yeah, I did some fun stuff. So anyway. So my Jonathan already alluded to this last episode. We had went to Quito, Ecuador our freshman year. And when the youth pastor announced this, I'd gotten to a place where I could relatively control my OCD to a point. After many years of therapy, some family counseling, and I went home after that Wednesday and said, Mom, I'm going to Ecuador. And I think she laughed at me, if I remember right. She literally laughed at me and said, I don't think she meant it in a mean way. It was just, honey, you know, you can't go, sweetie.
Oh, honey, sweetie, baby.
Yeah, you know, this is a third world dirty country. You can't go. You can't go. You're not going to be able to interact, right? And so I said, I need to go. I don't know why. I just feel like I need to go. And you know what those I want to say a bad word right now. You know what those
wonderful
people at the church
people.
Made me do?
Wonderful.
They made me go
people.
Back to behavioral therapy, which I, by the way, I still kind of loathe all things therapy. Anything that's got like a therapy on the end. I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying that.
You've had horrible experiences.
Yes, I've had horrible experiences. And specifically around behavioral therapy in particular. And so they made me go back again to make sure I wasn't going to have a mental breakdown 2,000 plus miles away
from
home. But
in retrospect, looking back, you're like, I probably would do the same thing as a pastor.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't. I'm just saying, you know, those mean people, you know, you know what I mean? So
who were looking out for the safety of the entire trip.
So
made you go back to therapy.
Yeah, so I got checked off and went. And I don't know how to explain it. I mean, I knew the Lord. The Lord had saved me. But something happened over there to me. You know, I held starving children.
You ate the food, didn't you?
I ate the food.
Off the food trucks.
I drank the fruit juice, you know, the fruit punch, whatever was in that stuff, you know.
Guanana.
Yeah. Guanana, and
I just remembered that sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And I look here's literally what happened. I went as Matthew Wright, and I never came back. The Lord had redeemed me before, but in Ecuador, the Lord dealt with my hate, my anger, some of my bitterness, and really just replaced it with a deep-seated love for the church and his people. And I just knew that God wanted me to serve him and be obedient. And everything changed after that. I mean, everything changed after that. My whole life, I'd been in the valley. And it was like the Lord said, I'm going to not pull you out of the valley, but I'm going to give you vision for what's in the valley. I'm going to let you experience a mountaintop here, and then I'm going to send you back down into the valley and let you see with true eyes this time. And, you know, I think, Jonathan, you could attest to the kind of transformation, I guess, that you witnessed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you went from being this... I mean, you were still... I don't mean this in a bad way. This is going to come across bad, and people are probably going to shun me for it, but it's okay. You were still a weird kid when you came back, but it was, you were weird for Jesus. Like, you just went from Matt Wright, who everyone knew was just a little different and had his quirks, to you were all about Jesus all the time.
All the time. I mean,
to some Christians, you were annoying.
And I was not.
Which is sad.
I was not a. Look, I'm not a leader by default. I'm not a speaker by default. I'm not gifted in those areas. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I found myself gifted in those areas. I came back, and I said to our youth pastor on a Wednesday night, look, I'd love to share what the Lord has done and doing in my heart and what's happened. He said, yeah, sure.
That was a big night for you.
It was a big night for me. I was super nervous about that. You know, I had shared with Jonathan prior to the trip kind of, you know, my background, which Jonathan had not known before.
Yeah, I mean, we had only been accountability partners for like a year, maybe.
And that was difficult for me because I had managed to hide so much of who I was, and I was so afraid that when someone found out who I really was, the first thing they were going to do was reject me.
Tuck tail and run. Like
everyone else had always done. And so Jonathan embraced me instead, and then I shared that with a small group not long after that. When you went to Ecuador, things changed, and I shared that part of my testimony on Wednesday, and all of a sudden people started coming up and, I don't know, relating to that story and wanting to talk, and somehow I became some type of leader in our youth group after that.
Well, you just brought it to life. I think that's what it was. It was like you, I think you were like one of the first people in our youth group that genuinely expressed, hey, I have a problem, but God. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and so I don't pretend to understand how all that was received or all transpired. I just know that God was good and faithful in those things, and things changed. And in high school, I became a Bible thumper. I was, for goodness sake, I was elected to represent the Bible club at prom one year. Okay,
right. Representing the Bible club.
Yeah, I mean that's how much of a Jesus freak I was, and I was odd in this respect. I didn't have a social class that I kind of hung out with. I hung out with the jocks. I hung out with the goths. We had a GSA, a Gay Straight Alliance Club at school. I hung out with some of them. I hung out with the geeks, and I didn't fit into a particular group. And so I just traveled between all of them and just talked about Jesus all the time. It worked really well for me, and because all I really cared about was Jesus at the end of the day. Yeah, I mean, that's how Jesus and I came to know to know one another. It's how that's what happened. And fast forward, going through college, doing biblical studies, feeling called to some type of ministry role. The desire has really just been to be obedient, and God has been so gracious and so good through those things. And I've loved the ride. And I wish someone had told me when I signed up for all this that it was going to cost everything, because it's been costly. It has been costly. And if you're on the fence about Jesus, let me just tell you, it's going to cost. It's going to hurt. It's going to be painful. I mean, Jesus in the Gospels invites his disciples to pick up your cross and follow after me. Man.
I think that's just one thing we just need to, I wouldn't say emphasize, but just understand that following Jesus, like, he calls you, but he calls you to give up everything to follow him. I mean, just like in Luke 9, you know, you don't get to go back. Like, when Christ calls you, you pick up and follow. Yeah, I mean,
you know, that old song, I've decided to follow Jesus, you know, no going back now, no going back, right? Look, here's what I would say. I love the words of Jim Elliot, and he says, he is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. And that's so true. So, like, hold on a second. Like, flipping through Mark, for example. So look at this. So Mark 8, verse 35, for whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? Nothing. Nothing. And so, look, I guess that's the point, right? Like, Jesus is going to cost everything. You want to follow Jesus, it's going to cost everything. But in the end, you're going to gain everything. And it's like the parable Jesus says, hey, the man finds his treasure in this field. And what does he do? He goes and sells everything he owns to buy the field. And that's exactly what Jesus invites us to do. Hey, sell everything, come follow me.
Because I'm worth it.
I'm worth it.
I think that's the other thing is it's going to cost you everything, but in the end, it's worth it. It's worth more than anything else you have.
And so that, you know, that's my testimony. And look, testimony never really ends. Testimony is about conversion, right? How you met Jesus. But testimony is also about what the Lord's doing in your life right now, like in this moment. I hope that's encouraging to people just to listen to us walk through and share how the Lord has worked some in our lives. I hope that encourages you guys to share your testimonies. And if you've never done that, look, you want a safe place to start. The safe place to start is at church or with other peers that love the Lord and just say, I just want to share what the Lord has done in my life and how it came to meet the Lord.
And be okay with critiques, because I think the other thing is an effective way when you're sharing your testimonies, you need to make sure that you're being clear in your communication. And so maybe your friend that's listening will say, hey, you know, you kind of focused on this over here, but it was kind of a rabbit trail and didn't really make sense. You need to bring this more into focus. And so I think becoming excellent communicators in our testimony will allow us to become more effective.
Yeah, and I think that's important, but I'd rather, at least from my perspective, look, communication's an art that takes time. Yeah. That being said, though,
you got to start somewhere.
You got to start somewhere, and you cannot. This is spirit led and spirit driven, right? So as you're sharing your testimony and as you're sharing the gospel, look, should we be persuasive and should we try to reason with people? Let me think about that. Yes, like that's the answer. Yes,
you didn't. You didn't really think about that.
Well, that was
the point.
Did you
not have to?
That didn't have to. Like that, it's yes, we should. We should use those things. Paul tried to persuade people, but it also needs to be filled with the Spirit. Look, Paul says this in Corinthians, and he goes, look, Apollos waters, I water, God provides the growth. And our role in this is to share, preach, teach the gospel, and plead with the Lord.
Our responsibility is to plant and water, and that's it.
Yes, but you know what? If you're not doing any of that, you got to go do it.
Yep.
Got to go do it.
Yep. I mean, that's what you got to do. So you guys can find us on Instagram and Twitter at This Is Our Call. You can find the podcast on any of your favorite podcasting platforms.
All of them. Apple, Spotify, no, that's the same thing, right? Apple. Anyway, yes, Stitcher.
Google and Google Podcast are different. Google Play and Google Podcast are different.
Which is weird, by the way. I don't know why they even do that.
Whatever. Apple has like its separate app that confuses people.
I know. Oh, iHeartRadio.
Yeah, we're on iHeart.
iHeartRadio. Yep.
Stitcher.
Tune in.
If you just go on Podcast Addict, we're there too.
You can just, on our website, you can just listen to the podcast. So, yeah.
We're everywhere.
Everywhere. Till the whole world knows.
This is our call.